to data privacy. We're going to get into a lot more detail now and actually how we do some of the things we talked about. Those of you that are coming back for the second round,
you're brave. We're proud of you. And there'll be free drinks at 5:30 to reward you for your...
That's right. I'm Eddie Schwartz. I'm Chief Security Officer at Nationwide.
I'm Diana Kelly, and I work for a company called Lockstar. I have 10 years of consulting and design experience for secure systems, and I've worked in the privacy realm with companies, large and small.
I have a lot of experience, but I'm not going to admit it in public. All right, so part two of the agenda. Let's just recap. Part one, we talked about why do we care about this, and really why we care about it is the business drivers for this. You know, all this stuff is interesting, and it's useful, fun stuff on data privacy, but the fact is we as security people need to justify our existence, need to justify our budgets, need to have ways to enhance the security of our operations and what we do. In the first half, we talked about some of the drivers that are taking us there, and what's the privacy landscape. And then we talked a little bit about some of the impact on our companies if we don't do something about this. Okay, so now we're fully informed on those issues. Now we're going to talk about the real responses to this situation, what we should actually be doing, and some of the solutions that both Diana and I have been involved with in our experience in data privacy.
And I think you should do your disclaimer. I'm worried about you with Nationwide.
About my
disclaimer?
Yeah, okay. I talk about a lot of stuff in here that, Nationwide's doing this or that. The fact is that I have to say that even though I'm saying this thing, these are the views of me as the presenter and in no way represent the interests of my company or anything that the company's really doing.
Right.
So, whatever that means.
And also, just in case anybody was not at the first session and is going, hey, part two. What's that? That's not in the agenda. Eddie and I just met last week. We met because Eddie was going over the website and saw that, oh my gosh, we were back to back giving almost exactly the same talk. So we felt that rather than having people have two light 1 hour talks covering the same material, that we would join forces and we
take
would
take more time.
Yeah, and take two and well, it's the same amount of time, but we would go more in depth and cover the background in session one and the technology in session two, which is what we're doing.
We talked in the first part of this about the fact that everybody's concerned about data privacy. We added some quotes in the, you'll see them in your book. I kind of like this one from Christie Brinkley. And, the issue is that it's a changing world and it's getting worse in terms of data privacy. Certainly the invasions to privacy are getting worse. So basically we're going to talk about what do we do about that. We also said this in the first part, basically planning for privacy. Yes, you do need a plan. And the question is, who's planning the plan? We'll talk about that in a second. One of the things you should know is that there's no simple magic pill for this. I mean, there's no way you're just going to go out and buy Checkpoint's privacy. After the last session in there, I heard you don't want to buy Checkpoint, but...
You definitely don't. Yeah, Privawall.
Wouldn't want to anyway, but no Checkpoint people in the room, are there? There's no magic privacy solution out there. There are no technologies out there today that's going to make all this go away. It's, in fact, the thing that's going to help this a lot is all of the things that we already know how to do as security practitioners, and now we get to apply to this problem and perhaps get a little more management attention in the application of our knowledge and skills and techniques to this problem. Diana and I are both going to talk about a framework. We come at it a little bit differently, but basically it's the same concept. We've kind of blended it together, but we'll both talk about our experiences in this and how you actually move from saying, oh yes, this is a problem, to actually getting something done and getting something in place that you can feel you've actually got a compliance program working in some way. Okay, where do you start on all this stuff? Well, the privacy policy is where you start. Someone in the break asked me, I want to get all the security done on this privacy thing. Where do I go with it? Well, that's a good question. You know, the issue is, however, what is your privacy policy in the company? You know, what do you want to do with data? Do you want to let customers opt in, opt out? And this is not going to be your decision as a security practitioner. This is a decision that's going to be a business decision. It needs to be driven by those people. But basically, this is Eddie's opinion on this.
We disagree
a little on this, but I think opt-out is a short-sighted position, and I'll tell you why. Opt-out basically means that you tell the customers, we share your data, and if you don't like it, send us a note or call us or do something to get our attention, and we'll let you opt out of that, and we won't share your data anymore. Opt-in is where basically we say, we have lots of business partners with whom we would like to share your data, but because we're nice people, we won't do so unless you tell me proactively, I want you to share my data with somebody. And in some cases, if you think about it, you've already opted in to things voluntarily. Do you want to be on our special mailing list to know about cheap fares to Honolulu? Oh, yes, I do. That's opting in, okay? Do not share is a position that basically says, I don't share data with anybody under any circumstances beyond, you know, actual business requirements that, you know, I need to conduct business, okay? When we looked at this, I mean, we're trying to decide what is the right position for the company, and the difficulty is that we were afraid that in time the U.S. would move to an opt-in environment. That is to say that if we made all the changes that I'm going to talk about later in our systems and our data architectures and so on, we do all that, spend all that money, notify the customers all these things we're doing to meet regulatory requirements, and then the laws would change and say, oh no, now the world is opt-in. So we tended to set the bar high because we were basically trying to manage the potential risk associated with having to redo everything a couple of years from now. Now, Diana, you actually don't believe necessarily that that's going to be the case.
Well, I think it's indicative. We were talking earlier before when we were trying to meld our slides. You were saying that a lot of CSOs and CIOs at other large institutions do not have a security background, which makes you unique because you do have a security background. And I think that your policy is an example of that. You're raising the bar as high as you can and looking at it from really what's better for the consumer, what's more caring. Whereas I do see, you know, there's a strong trend in America, which is really the info gravy train, and opt out is very much in line with that, because United States has this nice floor already where, hey, unless you say I can't sell your data, I can sell your data. And I think that they're going to continue to sell our data. I mean, it's much better from a you know, information gravy train perspective, but it's not as caring of the consumer.
Well, we went through this process. So first step in this framework we're talking about here, you got to have the privacy policy. How did that happen, and why would a security officer be involved in this? The bottom line is we couldn't get anyone to focus on this space. I knew as a security officer that at some point I would have to deal with all this stuff, you know, and I would have to have controls and policy surrounding this and have, you know, changes to potentially the way we classify data, all this kind of stuff. I just basically decided to get people motivated in this space and became, you know, a key player on the team that put this together. But you know what? It's not up to me what, you know, which we choose here. You get the business people get in the room and they all say, you know, how many of you are sharing data? You know, only one person raised their hand. What's the revenue stream associated with that? Minuscule. Do not share became our policy, basically, and that was a no-brainer. But a lot of companies are not going to have that same situation.
Yeah, they're making huge amounts on it. And the privacy policy, the development is an interesting, as with how many people here have been involved with security policy development? Okay, that's a good number. Was it a good experience or a bad experience? Yeah.
Did everyone just adopt the policy and say, oh, yes, I'm on board with that, and I'll give millions of dollars to support that?
Right. I mean, you know, privacy policy is, again, it's another uphill battle. It's an opportunity, yes, for the company to come together and agree and get buy-in. It's an opportunity to come together and agree and get buy-in. It's also a reality of a very political, supercharged environment.
Well, what you need to obviously take into consideration, which is really important, is if you have a really sort of consumer unfriendly privacy policy, it could come back to haunt you from a brand perspective. So, you know, again, this is not your decision, but this is part of what goes into it.
Also, beware of what you say in that policy if it's going up on, well, either internally or on your website, because sometimes if you, for entertainment value, you might want, in the last one, we said go read the public comments on the NPRM of HIPAA, but for more entertainment value, read everybody's privacy policy, because some people's privacy policies are lawsuits waiting to happen. They pretty much promise the moon, and you want to be very careful that you don't overpromise and leave yourself open to legislation.
Yeah, if you think about it from this standpoint, you go to a large multinational company's privacy policy, and it, you know, describes all of these things they do, you know, including the security around the data. Now think of your own jobs and the challenges you've faced in implementing a really comprehensive, complete, bulletproof security program in your organization. You got to start laughing to yourselves, thinking there's no way these people can be doing what they're saying. And in fact, a lot of companies that have gone back and tried to analyze their actual practices against their policies have realized, we're not doing this. So is it okay to say this? Absolutely not. And the FTC would agree with that.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Okay. So in terms of the policy, here's what you're going to wind up with based on the experience that we both have. If you're working in a place that has one single product to sell and one set of customers in a single vertical, and that's about it, you might be able to achieve an enterprise privacy policy. Okay. And that is that you do everything a certain way. But a lot of companies have multiple products that are completely different due to acquisitions or mergers that have occurred. They work in different verticals potentially. They cross, you know, they do things that are across verticals, and the data needs to move across those. So they might be subject to multiple regulatory environments. So what you might wind up with is some high-level overarching statement of these are the things we're going to do, and then and when I say overarching, translate that to vague statement of this is what we're going to do, and then sub-policies associated with each specific product line or line of business that actually describes more granularly exactly what are the policies and what are the controls, the security controls surrounding that policy. It's not a bad thing to have multiple policies. I mean, it's not like you're giving up something in the process, but the issue is if you do have multiple policies, it raises the complexity in your organization in terms of managing the security around that. And obviously, the key thing is, I don't know about all of you, but I didn't want to stay in the privacy business the rest of my life. You know, I wanted to get on with this job I was hired to do, which is information security. So the corporation needs to have somebody accountable and responsible for managing that policy environment, and that would be a privacy officer.
It's also more effective, too. I mean, if you try and put everything into one single policy, you usually end up with doorstops, and that's not going to be very, very useful. Very thick, very big wads of paper that nobody can plow through. A high-level policy, when Eddie says vague, it doesn't mean bad. It really just means this is what the organization believes. It's our philosophy. And then the functional sub-policies are short and readable. And another big benefit is that if something new comes out, You can adjust to that really quickly within these shorter sub policies, rather than having to go back to the doorstop and finding out, you know, cross section subsection A of page 576, blah blah. Those things almost never get rewritten. And really, when the internet started to flood, I saw a lot of this in companies because their policies just couldn't begin to understand or adhere to what was going on. So they weren't doing anything in terms of saying what's acceptable usage of the web, what's acceptable usage of mail.
Some other things on policies. There are a lot of good examples out there already, okay? Now, you do need to learn the difference between good and bad, but again, some of the things are driven by regulatory requirements, and some of them are driven by, like, the truth, basically. Can we do this thing that we agreed to do? I just got beaten up by my boss recently because I issued a new security policy in the office, and he said, how the heck are we ever going to achieve this in the time frame you've described? You know, so he was giving me a reality check. The same thing on the privacy policy. There's a lot of good stuff out there, and there are a lot of organizations that have already researched who has good privacy policies, and you can join these organizations and get that information. One that comes to mind is Privacy in American Business. It's an organization that's led by Alan Weston, who's one of the principal thinkers in privacy public policy. He's a law professor at Columbia, or maybe he's left that and figured out he could make some money on this space. But anyway,
also the final rule of GLBA has sample policy clauses in it that you're encouraged to lift and reuse.
Right. One of the things that is really important is that you put these policies through, and we'll talk about that in a second, a very comprehensive review process. The lawyers have to look at it really closely. Don't forget that step. I mean, if you don't have general counsel signing on the bottom line saying this policy is okay, you got a problem. And, you know, certainly there are other things like a compliance officer would need to review them if you're in a bank, for example. You have to go through that whole process. So who clears on the policy? Short answer is everyone. When I say everyone, here's what I mean by that. You'd be amazed at the things you don't know that goes on. When we got people to the table and started talking about whether we share data or not today, everyone was like, oh, no, we don't share data. We don't share data. And as we started digging, we actually sent a SWAT team out with a mission of trying to find out. You come to find out that there are little pockets of places where we do share data, and we didn't know about it. And the product owners over that area had no idea we were doing this, and also were upset that they weren't getting any revenue for it or something like that. But I mean, the point is that you gotta push this way down into the organization and make sure that everyone understands what we're agreeing to do. Imagine from the systems perspective, you know, the assumptions that you make about changes you'll need to make to the systems, you know, come to find out that there's some environment that's 20 years old and they just, you know, there's something that'll completely break if you add another data attribute to a database or something like that. So these are the people that need to be involved. The CEO obviously has to decide from a brand perspective where you want to be. I talked already about business units, the lawyers. If you have a public policy area in your company, like a government affairs or a regulatory affairs officer, he or she needs to be involved in this process. Of course, information security has a key role in this, which we'll describe a little more. And you need to have some serious IT reps at the table. All of these people should clear on this policy.
Yeah, and having them all at the table does mean you're going to have more fights at the table, a lot more fights at the table. But it means that when the policy is lifted up and goes away, you're going to have a lot more buy-in and drill down within the organization. If you don't get the buy-in at that table and you don't go through the pain of the fighting as you're establishing the policy, it's not going to be implemented. People will not, they will find ways around it unless they feel that they are co-owners of it.
Right. Okay, so step one, you've got this policy. Now you as a security officer or security manager understand that, okay, these are the rules by which we're going to live as a company. Well, now you get to translate that to real life. And real life is that there are certain operational considerations that map against this privacy policy. For the sake of simplification, divided this into four areas: process, organization, technology, and compliance. And I'll talk about each of these in detail in a second. But basically, if you imagine that within each of those areas, there are things to do in order to meet the policy objectives. If you're, again, a big company with a lot of products and a lot of lines of business, you're going to have to be involved in a process that maps this across any potential business units or product lines that have to work into these operational components that'll have to be fixed. I'll talk about them next. So, okay, what do we do? Well, in order to do this, you got to get a working group together of some kind. And basically, the participants of the group are the people that cleared on the policy to a large extent. You're going to have a lot of spin-offs, potentially. You know, the IT people are going to have a lot of work to do. Security people are going to have a lot of work to do. The lawyers are going to have different issues that they're going to investigate on their own. But basically, you start with a process where you actually figure out, what are we doing today? All right? I mean, and what are we doing today won't necessarily jibe with what your privacy policy says. Your privacy policy says we do not share information. Oops, we're sharing it today. Or your privacy policy says we're going to give everyone the opportunity to opt out of the sharing of information. Oops, we have in three lines of business none of that today. Okay, so all of that needs to be figured out in some way, and all of the issues need to be ferreted out. The process that I use is based on those four elements that I described to you earlier. For example, in the process area, basically some questions you should ask yourself. What processes do we follow in the life cycle of personally identifiable information? In other words, when a data record is captured, presumably it might be captured by telephone, by an internet form of some sort, or you know, some kind of customer service interaction. What is the life cycle of that piece of information? And do I truly understand from the beginning to the end of a customer record in what databases it lives, who touches it at a given point in time, who should be allowed to see it, who should be allowed to aggregate it with something else? All of these things need to be considered. There are basically issues like scripts. for example, you have customer service reps that they have scripts. And when someone calls and says, hey, I want to do something on my policy, they should have, you know, forms that say, oh, it's a policy question about my auto insurance. Ask them these three questions. They ask these three questions, you know, another result comes out. You need scripts that comply with your privacy policy. If you said certain things, you don't want your customer service reps to be saying, you know, oh yeah, you know, you have a privacy question? Oh yeah, well, we share the data, when your privacy policy says you don't. So all of these process-related things you need to address. Organizational perspective, that's an easy one. Who's in charge of privacy in your organization? I was a year ago. I mean, I was somewhat self-anointed, but I, up until last month, I was basically in charge of privacy. You know, the presidents of the company heard that, and they said, oh, Eddie's in charge of privacy. Well, no, I mean, I'm not a lawyer. I don't know anything about public policy except what I'm concerned about and what interests me sometimes, you know? So these are questions you need to ask yourself. What are all the different organizational touch points associated with this? For example, who responds to privacy inquiries from regulators or from the FTC? Who responds to privacy inquiries from customers and things like that? All of these different organizational components need to be established. What's the accountability model? You know, we got a compliance office. Guess what? They don't know anything about privacy, and they haven't signed up to do anything with it, and they don't think that they're going to have to do anything with it. All these things need to be evaluated. From a technology perspective, this comes a lot closer to some of the stuff that we're dealing with. It is things like, do we classify data in any way? I don't know how many of you have ever tried to do anything with classifying data in a database, but, you know, do you guys have any data models that actually set labels and attributes on pieces of data so that you knew that if you combined fields 2, 3, and 5, that would constitute personally identifiable information? You know, I mean, unless you work for DOD, you probably haven't done that to the degree where you've actually established field-level attributes on data. But yet, you've got to, in some way, be able to manage that data set. And that potentially implies a change to your data architecture. That needs to be analyzed. Going a little further than that, think of data and transmission. I was talking to somebody in the break about, you know, well, we just send data from point A to point B. I mean, it's a concern, because I know in our organization, we've got rogue installations of PGP sending customer data out. We've got people FTPing data in the clear that contains personally identifiable information. How are you going to get a grip on that? Do you have a grip on it today? This is the delta you need to manage in terms of where you say you're going to be in your privacy policy, and ultimately where you are today. And finally, in the compliance, what actually is the compliance strategy of the company? Hopefully, the compliance strategy is not wait for the FTC to knock on your door. The compliance strategy should be that it's some combination of activity that's governed by an organizational component like a privacy office, involves compliance officers that are monitoring certain things, involves security people involved with building things the right way, and of course involves the audits process, where you let your internal audits department go crazy now and then and find out if you're doing everything you said you were going to do. Comments on that?
No.
Okay. Okay, so I mentioned the working groups where you start, and these are the people that are going to be involved in the analysis I just described of those four key areas. General counsel, government affairs, I mentioned. Product and operational leads, this is probably the most important area. The people who own the products usually own the customer records. They're the ones that are going to care about all this, because they're the ones that potentially will have the use of this data constrained in some way by a different privacy policy. I didn't have marketing on here, but marketing is a key player in this as well, because it's usually marketing that will wind up signing all kinds of fun agreements with people to exchange data, and then they go and check with everybody. Is that okay after the data's already been exchanged? Information security, of course, we have a big responsibility building the control environment around all this. IT is going to have to figure out the costs associated with this. If you think about it this way, you know, we in Y2K, we had to change a couple of numbers in a date field, you know, or expand a date field to 4 digits instead of 2. Imagine the cost associated with re-architecting your principal back office applications. I mean, it's big. I won't tell you what our number is, but it's in the double-digit millions, okay? And if you want to do it the right way. So IT is going to have to take this information, take the control environment that you helped them develop, and take it back and figure out the cost, and then they're going to have to come up with the money. I know about your IT organization, but you know, let's say you showed up and said, "Oh, I need $20 million to re-architect the data for data privacy." That would be a big shock for somebody's budget, and probably some vice president somewhere would not get paid his bonus at the end of the year if that was a big surprise. Human resources needs to be involved because you've got an internal privacy issue as well. Think about it this way. You're in the business, let's say, of selling financial services or insurance. You've got employees who are customers. How do you deal with that? I mean, that's a complicated environment.
Also, human resources owns most of the information. You know, ultimately, they see themselves as the owners of it. And I think it also with the slide, it's important to note that your company may be very different in its organization than to have a government affairs office or to have, you know, compliance and internal audits. You may be a much smaller company or not an insurance company. But the working group members absolutely need to be the people who are going to buy in ultimately and bring this forth. And that's why sales and marketing is absolutely critical to have on this working group, because they're the ones that are going to go around it.
Right.
They're the first people that are going to go right around whatever you say. So you make sure that you get them to agree to this, or they're not going to comply and you're going to be out of it.
One translation you may want to make on this is just equate these things to roles in the working group.
Yeah.
And, you know, for example, you will need input from somebody on public policy. If you don't have a government affairs office, you need to find out. Maybe it's through your general counsel if you have an in-house counsel. Maybe they, you know, monitor the regulatory environment. Maybe there's some group. But you need to have somebody who does tell you what the heck's going on in the public policy space.
Or hire a lawyer. There are lawyers out there that specialize in privacy policy now, and they work in technical lawyers that work with companies, and they'll come in and be your government affairs office.
Okay, so now you've got your policy, you've got your working group, you know the task at hand. It's again going out and doing the stuff that I mentioned earlier against these four areas. And you know, keep in mind, this is one approach. I mean, you can define the areas, these risk areas, in any way you want, just so you get a grip on it. You know, this has been my approach on things. You know, I always want to know what's the governance model for the organization, who's accountable and responsible, who has which role and responsibility. So that's why I have organization up there. You use different terminology a little bit than I do. But
yeah, you'll see if you have the handouts from my slides, I do a sort of more of a step-step framework kind of thing, because that's what I've found was successful. But again, you know, Eddie and I are coming at this from different. He's the internal security officer, and I've always been the external consultant helping folks work through and plan. So you will see those framework slides and the handouts.
So where if you're a security officer, where might you be involved in, let's say, these four areas? Well, I mean, I can tell you that I'm involved in all four, right? Because if you think about it from an organizational perspective, I have a role with respect to information policy and protection of information, and this is certainly an issue of protection of information. So whatever we do as for a privacy policy perspective needs to be tracked and synced into information security or information assurance policy that's out there. From an organizational perspective, I clearly have some role with respect to this. From a technology perspective, you know, we're talking technical countermeasures, access controls, encryption, networking interfaces, all kinds of things like that. Again, I have a role in terms of helping to build a system that is secure and supports our policy. And finally, from a compliance perspective, you know, I need to provide support to those elements that are monitoring compliance, because they may need technical assistance in determining if a solution is appropriate or not. I mean, that's just, you know, one example. But in any case, everyone will go off and do what they have to do. In terms of what you all have to do against this sample framework that I've given you here, you need to go off and figure out, where do I stand on each of these things? What do I bring to the table? What's my role? And then how do I start working that to success in some manner?
And I think, do we have the architecture slide still in here?
We do. It's a little further on, I think.
I'm going to address the gaps in there.
This is your out, by the way, this is important to me because I needed an out on this. And that is, the company needs a privacy officer. Now, again, some companies may not be large enough to support a full-time billet, and I guarantee you it's going to be hard for you to find people with this experience today. But
as Dr. Lee Kushner.
Right, as a collateral duty, it's something that's required, and I think HIPAA actually does require someone to be designated.
Yes, HIPAA does require a designated privacy officer.
Right. I mean, so, you know, put someone in charge and hold them accountable for this. And, you know, if you want to be that person and this interests you, let me know and I'll tell you offline about my experience with it, which was good.
Do you know what's interesting? I'm not clear if this person has to be full-time dedicated or if they can wear multiple hats. So I think that's going to be a way that a lot of people get around this, is that they're just going to plop the privacy officer hat on somebody who's, you know, also, I don't know.
We took a fellow who was a director of legislative policy, made him the privacy officer. It's probably 80% of what he does at Nationwide, and he has a staff. Use a common reporting tool. One of the things as you go through this process of, you know, going from where you are today to where you want to be, I mean, again, it's sort of like tracking any project. You want to know, are we green, yellow, or red? And as you go through, for example, the four areas I mentioned, okay, how are we doing on process? You know, how are we doing on figuring out the organizational components? Assuming we have technology deliverables associated with this, do we have a system that comes together in the working group and we could say, oh, we're yellow, red, or whatever. It's just an example, but find some way of managing this project as you would any other. Manage very closely high-risk areas. For example, where there's a stated deadline. GLB now has a stated deadline of July something of next year. And, you know, you need to work towards that deadline, and there's certain things that have to occur in certain time frames. Those are high-risk areas, and those need to be monitored closely. Or, for example, you encounter a system that has nagging security problems that you've been aware of all along. Now you lump privacy on top of that environment. That, to me, would be flagged as a high-risk area. We haven't been able to get this under control. For example, transmission of data to third parties. You know, we haven't been able to get that under control. Now we have to get it under control. All right, we got to really pay close attention to that as we move forward. Report to a central repository, I already mentioned. A lot of similarities.
Right, and I mean, I think basically you could summarize that slide with, just because privacy's new and we haven't dealt with it before doesn't mean you can throw away the standards of good project management, because this is a project, and keep those milestones and keep following standard project process.
Okay, I think I've talked about most of this already. My phase three is actually just do all this stuff. You know, but keep in mind there's a cost associated with it. And, you know, you want to discover those costs early on and get those up to management and get people to respond to them. I don't know how many of you have had problems getting adequate funding for your program, but it seems to me that every time I ask for more money, and even if I get it, I realize that I really need another million or two more, you know, than what I ask for. This is a very good way to obtain some fundings and to implement some process that maybe you didn't think you could implement before. Regulation has a way of doing that. People ask, well, like, why is DOD disciplined in a lot of ways? Why are banks disciplined? Regulation. I mean, any highly regulated environment is going to have a lot more money put on some of this stuff.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's because oftentimes security is, you know, the big sinkhole. You're not adding to the profit line. Why are you taking money away from the company? And this is a lot of administrators have found that, well, now company, you know, the CEO is going, well, we don't want to be out of the regulation. We don't want to be out of compliance. Here's some. How much do you need? So it's been a nice turnaround.
I'll let you address this one and the next one.
Okay. So yeah, as you start to build the blocks, we went through the assessment. First, you need the policy. You built the policy. That's great. The policy is usually a philosophy. It's usually sort of a theory. It's what we want to go for. But it's not the procedure. It's not where the rubber hits the road. And you also have to actually put in a procedure, and that's real rules. Eddie had talked about scripting, and scripting is a good example of a procedure, how somebody answers the phone and what data they can give out about a customer. They need to have a script or at least a set of rules so that they know what's right or wrong. You can say, yes, we want to have strong authentication, but unless you say strong authentication is two-factor, using a secure ID card, and every person has to hold that secure ID card in a safe place. If you don't have that kind of written procedure, people can come basically blow away all the nice work of your policy. At one company I worked with, a very large company, we did have strong authentication at the perimeter with a secure ID card. And we traveled all the time, and the consultants really didn't like to have to worry about the secure ID card and the laptop, and I can't get into the local network if I don't have both of them. So what a bunch of people started doing was they had super glued their security card right to the top of their laptop, which is great. They were never without it, never lost it. They always had it together. Of course, we've now reduced it down to single-factor authentication when they were going into the perimeter. That's the kind of thing that policies protect you from. Policies tell you what and how is okay. Procedures protect you from in the policy. Really, without them, your policy, it's not going to be very useful.
I think also of, again, I compared it in a break to the EDI model. You know, presumably you have some kind of network security perimeter policy, right, that describes if you're trading data with an untrusted party, untrusted being, you know, not you, basically. So if you're trading data with somebody like, let's say, a third-party affiliate in some way that you are authorized to exchange customer data with them, you know, what process do you use to do that? Do you use some kind of PGP armored file that has the customer data in it, and you exchange keys with the other side? Do you require SSH or something? I mean, how do you do this? This is also part of the whole procedural element of this.
Yeah, it's really, it's simple. You say that it has to be transported securely, okay, but to say it has to be encrypted with this size key, that's the procedure that you get in there.
I'll do that one.
Okay.
Part of what we talked about in the first session was the fact that there are actually regulations that are forcing us to do this stuff. Again, it depends on the industry you're in, but you'd be amazed at how some of the applicability works and pervades different areas. Gramm-Leach-Bliley 501B, the recent FTC, which means any website, FTC, well, not only websites, I mean any business, but websites are what they're after lately. They've released some draft standards and some draft rules on this, and actually describe some things you're supposed to be doing. There's some draft rule under HIPAA that's been released, not really security specific, but at least privacy specific.
There are some security drafts, yes.
Okay.
Yes, the final security can't come until the final privacy is approved.
Okay. And then you've got the European Union stuff that's been out there for, I guess, almost over two years now. So you need to do all this stuff if you want to comply with regulations. The statutes are somewhat vague and they're not complete. So, bottom line, though, as I read all this stuff, is you got to have a real security program in place, not just lip service to security. And you need to have a demonstrable standard of due care. That may sound like some vague, newspeak or something to you, but I think one of the roles that you all have in this is, what is a demonstrable standard of due care? Different companies will interpret it different ways, but again, what you got to look at this as a bonus. The bonus is that you get to help define what is that demonstrable standard of due care, just like we have generally accepted security practices and principles, whatever that is, and we have different publications that I'm sure you've all seen out there that sort of govern the way we're supposed to be doing things in the security space, but are not, really necessarily formal standards in any way. Well, maybe the British standards, if you like those, but the point is that you get to define what's reasonable within a boundary. And I think that this is an opportunity. That's how I looked at it. I just said, this is an opportunity for me to tighten the screws a little more and to get done what I needed to get done. And assuming that you are viewed as the experts that you are in your organization, it's reasonable to say, here's my analysis of how we get to the standard of due care, and here are the policies, procedures, the people changes, the mechanisms that we need to put around all this to make it workable in some way. So this adds fuel to the fire, definitely. Your turn.
Okay. Before I get into tools, I don't think architecture is in there.
It's there somewhere.
Okay. It should go before.
Okay, we can do that one now.
Thank you. I'll say five more times. How's that? Practices are the link between the procedures. They're actually left out of this, but an important thing about practices and procedures, you could apply it to the same thing, is that not only is it where the rubber hits the road, but that you've got to go through a form of, is this viable? Is this something people are going to be able to do? Because most of the time, people find that a policy or a procedure sounds really good in theory, but it's not going to work in practice. So you have to test that. That also applies to your architecture and technology. A lot of times a privacy plan sounds really good in theory. We will have end-to-end authentication from the user to where the back-end data resides. It will be a secure SSL tunnel. Nothing will break it. That may sound really good. It may be a really good dream, but there could be that your architecture is not going to support that. It could be that where the data sits on your mainframe isn't going to support some of the technical concepts that you've got in your policy. So get realistic and get real about what your environment is. You don't live in a green field. You live in an architecture that is there and exists, and you probably have some spaghetti back there, and it's not very pretty, and you got multiple systems and some